Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Everyone, I am your host today in Kishi Free, and I am going to be joined very shortly by my wonderful, awesome co-host, Mr. Eric Brown. Eric, are you there?
Yes, ma'am, I am here.
Hi, how are you doing?
Oh, doing good. Made it just in time.
You feeling better? Oh, do I totally understand. Well, everybody, today it's me and Kishi Free and Eric. And unfortunately, Erica is not feeling well. So, Erica, please, sending you good shout-outs and good vibes and hoping you feel better today. We have got lots of NFL news, and we're going to talk about, again, who's improved their roster this week, plus some PGFL Saturday night, and our preview of IWFL, and with our network partner, Backseat Coach. But before we log into and let our new guest, Eric, let's catch up with you for a little bit. How have you been?
Well, last week I was under the weather, kind of lost my voice too. But I'm better this week. But this week we're running around looking at houses. So we were doing that today. I also had a photo shoot after that, so and that ended up taking a little bit longer than I thought. So so not your usual weekend, but a good one nonetheless.
I totally understand. I'm going to let you in on my little secret. You guys are hearing it first live on radio.
Uh-oh.
I am on the parent cheer team. I am competing as a member of the parent cheerleading team.
Oh, no. So what does that
entail? So right now I am not Coach Kishi. I am being coached again, and it is just such an experience. Well, my oldest daughter, as I told you, you know, finally made the all-star cheer team. Yay, go baby. Mommy's proud of you. And there's competition in April, and this particular competition, there's supposed to be a parent division.
Oh, okay.
So with the parent or the, you know, edition or the grown-up edition or, you know, whatever this division is, her cheer coach, the lady who runs the all-star team, because they have multiple teams with their group, decided to create a parent team, and she'd been wanting one for the longest time. And of course, you know, I'm a former cheerleader, so I was like, yay, I'm all in. I did not realize what I was in for. let's just say I'm not 15 anymore. So once we get off air, there will be a long, hot Epsom salt bath soak.
Yeah, it's funny how that
speaks up. Yes, you know, because you think you cheer for so long, and you're like, oh, yeah, I still got it. And you do, but you don't have it the way you used to have it.
Right.
And I'm like, I don't remember my shoulders hurting this much from doing my jumps. And I don't remember my thighs hurting this much from doing the splits. And, you know, just all of the above. And I'm just like, oh, my goodness. But at the same time, it is in some ways like riding a bike. You don't forget. You just have to do it. You just either have to slow down some of the moves or you have to you just have to work really, really hard to play catch up. But it's been fun.
Hello?
Hello, you still there?
Hello, yeah.
Okay, great. So thanks again to everyone who... I can hear you great. No, we just were thanking everyone who participated in the Victoria's Secret Show Us Your Sports Bra Selfie Competition, and we now have a new contest. So go to the No Joke Football Shop by April 24th and tell us what's your favorite tee or hoodie and post the gear link on Twitter or Facebook to be entered to win. So again, we have a new contest, everyone. Go to the No Joke Football Shop by April 24th. Tell us what's your favorite tee or hoodie and post the gear link on Twitter or Facebook to be entered to win. And so now it is actually time for us to enter the No Joke Football Shop today at www.zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. Order your project apparel, like your leggings, hoodies, cool tees, for tryouts and save 10% off. Use Order Ship 10. Again, save 10% off and use Order Ship 10. And we also want to remind everyone that every sale of No Joke Football brand gear goes to help another player get noticed and recognized internationally through our photo shoots, through our social media platforms, and players like Christy Moran, Lauren Evans of Gridiron Queensland, plus Moon Arianda and Sophia Van B of FXF Mexico and LIBF. So, again, everyone, please, let's go into the No Joke Football Huddle, and we have an awesome guest today. We have the one and only backseat coach of Janet TV Football and Women's Gridiron Blog. So without further ado, let's bring in our coach. Hello, coach. How are you doing today?
Very good, Kishi. How are you?
I am great. Thank you so much for joining. My wonderful co-host, Eric Brown, is here joining me today.
It's a pleasure,
Eric.
How
are you doing, Coach?
Very good. Thank you.
So are you ready for the WFS season, especially with your militia and their transformation?
Yes, transformation. That's certainly one word for it. It's definitely pretty crazy when your favorite team's owner decides he's not going to do it anymore, and now the militia is self-funded team, and they've changed their name to Boston Renegades, as I think a lot of your listeners probably already know. But it's certainly
exactly.
a very exciting time in Boston. And very excited about the upcoming season in the Women's Football Alliance and also in the Independent Women's Football League.
Now, we know that you guys were the militia and you are now the Renegades, and we understand what happened in terms of, you know, like you just said, losing, you know, your backing, and now you all are self-funded. But what made you all, if I could ask, pick the name Renegades? I mean, I love it. I think it's awesome, and I think in light of what you all have done, it has been nothing short of amazing. But is there any backstory for the name Renegades or any history behind it or, you know, something really exciting to tell about what made you guys pick that name out of all the hundreds of millions of names you could have come up with?
Well, I remember you had asked the same question of Adrian Smith, our all-star
mm-hmm.
wide receiver, and I recall she gave a very excellent answer. And I don't really speak on behalf of the team, and I can't really say, you know, why they chose that. But I can tell you this.
Right.
The history of women's tackle football in Boston is one of renegades, going against the grain. Women's football in the Boston area started in the year 2000 with a team called the New England Storm. And in the year after the Storm formed and went to the championship game, by the way, a group split off from them to form their own team, and they were called the Mass Mutiny, quite appropriately called. And other football teams in the Boston area sort of kept splitting off the New England Storm. The Rhode Island Riptide, I mean, we're going back a few years, but ultimately, they became the New England Intensity. The Bay State Warriors were another team. So over the last, you know, 15 years, those renegade teams, as you will, started to condense into one, the Mass Mutiny and the Bay State Warriors, who had then been renamed the Boston Rampage, were combined into one team. And then last year, the New England Intensity folded, and a lot of their players came to the militia. So what started as one team and then fractured out into basically three different franchises finally came together into a single franchise, which is what we have now. But I think it was very appropriate that they chose the name Renegades because it does actually reflect the history of women's football in Boston.
And might I even add, in some levels, the history of women's football in general. And I really appreciate your giving that backstory because a lot of our listeners, even like myself, we're still new to the story and the experiences of female football players. So, I mean, so yes, so we did ask the question before, but even with what you've just given us now, it's still new information and we're still getting new listeners. And so having the opportunity to get that backstory, you know,
I appreciate you saying that, and you know, in our conversations, kind of off the air, you know that it's kind of part of my mission to talk a lot about women's football, because there are, you know, a lot of new fans coming in, and it's not really given the kind of attention in the mainstream media that other sports, men's sports, and even other women's sports. So I feel it's very important to, personally, to know about the history of women's football as much as I possibly can, not just, you know, behind my favorite team, but just, you know, across the country. It's a very fascinating history, and I hope people can come to appreciate someday the many, many women who have been real trailblazers, renegades, as you will, kind of going against the grain and playing football. And I really hope that one day the mainstream media will find it worthy to report on the women's football games in the same way they do as, you know, NFL games. Talk about the games like they're important, because they are very important to the people who play them and to the fans who watch
Absolutely.
Them.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree with you more, and that was why, you know, like I said, I wanted you to have this opportunity to be able to provide background, because it's only through learning and information that you begin to appreciate and have value and worth about what it is that you're watching, you know, and in a kind of situation. I don't know if you heard, but while Eric and I were chatting earlier, I was telling him, you know, that I joined the all-star cheerleader, and I'm a former cheerleader, and I've coached cheerleaders for several years, and so I recently became a member of the parent team. You know, we're actually going to do a competition, and we're going full out. But we have several parents who have never cheered before, and some of the people who are participating on the parent team, I'm proud to say, are fathers. We have three fathers on our team, and, you know, after, and the dads are struggling to get things that were just so natural to most of us. And so I turned to one of the fathers and I said, "It's a lot different when you're down here, isn't it?" And he said, "I actually will now understand what she's doing when I'm watching her video links that she sends me, you know, when I can't be at the competition, as opposed to just seeing a bunch of movement going really, really fast that I don't understand." He said, "Having this experience makes me really appreciate my daughter as an athlete." And I think that that's, you know, so critical to what
you
were just saying.
Well, you speak the truth, no doubt.
You know, having that understanding gives appreciation, and it also leads credibility to the respect. And I really thank you for, again, coming on the air. So speaking about your Renegades, what do you think that they're going to do this season? You know, how do you think that they're going to perform?
Well, obviously, it's a huge challenge organizationally to kind of essentially get a late start. The team has a full roster with no reserve of capital to do anything. So it's a bit crazy from the business end, I'd imagine. But I think. Given what I know about who is showing up to practices and who's participating in the workouts, strictly from, you know, a roster, a point of view, I think that they could repeat in winning a championship this year. I certainly think that they will have the top defense in the league this year. I know those are pretty bold things to say, but they are certainly going to have competition from other teams. But I think from the player personnel perspective, they have what they need to repeat a national championship.
Well,
that being said, they're
going to
face very stiff competition from D.C. and Chicago. No surprise there. They're certainly going to be very tough teams.
Well, that's a perfect lead-in. How do you think Chicago is going to adjust without Grisafi in the mix this year? And in the IWFL, the champs, the Pittsburgh Passion, you know, they look to repeat. Can you think of anyone to upseat them after the Keystone Assault has left for the WSFL? And I know
there's
two different questions about, you know, but...
Let me start with the WSFL. Like you said... the Keystone Assault has gone to the WSFL, and they might have been the only, I think they gave the Pittsburgh Passion the best competition, at least on paper. I wasn't there to see the games, but anyways, I think the Keystone Assault are the front runner in the WSFL to win that championship. In the IWFL, there are some pretty interesting developments in teams joining that league this year that will make things a little more competitive in a number of the divisions. The Sacramento Sirens, who have historically one of the best teams in women's football in the modern era, now in the IWSL, And I think they're going to bring some heat to the other teams out west, and they may very well head to the championship game. I expect Houston to still be competitive as well. Another team that joined the IWFL is the Nebraska Stampede. They came from the WFA. After they had their fifth year last year and have made very, very noticeable strides in that time. So I'm pretty sure that they'll be competitive against the Midwest champ, the Madison Blaze. That'll be a very interesting matchup. I'm not sure who's going to top whom, but there's definitely some more competition happening in the Midwest. Also, the Toledo Rain and the Tennessee Train have joined the Eastern Conference of the IWFL, and I think that they will provide more competition there. But the bottom line in the IWFL is the Pittsburgh Passion. I don't think anybody is even close yet in the IWFL to really competing against them. I'm not saying that upsets can't happen. I think that there are definitely teams that exist in the IWFL that could upset the Passion. It's in any given day sort of thing. But I'm pretty sure that the Passion are going to repeat in the IWFL.
Okay. Well, in the WFL, how do you think the Utah Falcons are going to do in their debut out west?
Well, they were very impressive as an independent team last year, and I think they're going to come out of the starting blocks very fast. When you get right down to it, I expect them to be very competitive. I think they could reach the title game out in the Western Conference, or as they call it, the American Conference. It's a possibility. I think they'll be, the San Diego Surge is going to be looking to return to the national championship, and they've added a very experienced player, a big name player, Jessica Springer. She won championships with the Dallas Diamonds a number of years ago. She rushed for a year in Chicago, or maybe two. Well known, she's making a comeback. Hopefully that will help San Diego out. I'm not exactly sure in what capacity they plan to play her. She is a running back. They seem pretty set at running back, so I'm not exactly sure what they plan to do there in San Diego with Jessica. But I know for sure that they'll be very competitive, and that right now they're the team to beat in the American Conference. But I think Utah will give them a run for their money. I'm very excited to see that matchup.
And then the Seattle Majestics, do you think they look to surprise people in the tough Northwest Division?
Well, having lost their starting quarterback, Rachel Gore, and their top defensive players, and as well as a really great wide receiver, Jamie Fornell, both of whom have moved to Chicago and will be playing for the Force, that's a pretty big hit for any team to take when you have, like, basically your two best players not there anymore. But I think they will surprise a lot of people. I'm pretty sure they're still going to be the number one up in that Pacific Northwest Division. They still have some experienced players. They do have a lot of rookies, but it's definitely kind of a wait and see kind of year for them. They lost their head coach who moved on. And now Scott McCarron has taken over as the full-time head coach of the Majestics. But they still have experience at quarterback, and they've got experience at running back. I expect them to probably be a run-first team for this season. But I don't think they're going to lose their grip on their division. They're definitely going to advance to the playoffs there.
Well, with them having more new players, but that's also a good sign isn't it that the not only that the team but the sport is improving and increasing in popularity? Or, I mean, is that a good sign in your opinion that, yes, they've lost some of their better players and that, you know, and that's going to be, of course, better for Chicago, but that they're able to have newer players and younger players who are new to the league, is that a sign, in your opinion, of the growth of women's football?
Absolutely. I think it's a good sign for any team that they have new people showing up to try out. And if they make your roster, it means that they're serious about playing football. So I do think it's a very good sign. In women's football, I think on-the-field experience really means a lot in terms of winning games and being a playoff-caliber team. So if you have to work with a lot of rookies, it's perhaps harder to maintain a certain level of competitiveness. But the players, of course, are very interested in learning, and they are like, you know, sponges for information. And if you've got a good coaching staff, which Seattle certainly does, and experienced veterans who are willing to share the knowledge, you can do a lot with rookies. You can get a lot accomplished. And that's one of the reasons why, that's certainly a good sign in Seattle that they have a lot of turnout for the team. I don't think they're going to suffer too much at all.
Well, now that leads me to ask another question, because, you know, we have been promoting the tryouts, and we've been promoting, you know, that the tryouts are now happening in North America, both in the United States and in Canada. What is the secret, or what is the, or maybe I'm asking the question, let me try to rephrase this. What do you think that women's football needs to do to retain these new interested rookies that are trying out? Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, what is it that and I can't say as a league because there are multiple leagues, what is it that women's football as a whole needs to do as it increases and more young ladies are trying out for the first time? What are some of the things that the leagues need to do to retain them to continue to grow? Or is that a challenge right now?
I'm not sure if it's a challenge. Which is to say, I don't think that the leagues are shrinking in terms of the number of women who want to play. I think it's increasing, kind of organically. Unfortunately, there's not a huge organized effort to get girls and young women into playing football from young ages. And therein lies really the answer to your question. It's bigger than just the leagues in maintaining interest in the game on the behalf of women. There's got to be a larger sort of governing body. I think maybe that could be my answer. If women's football could be managed by a larger governing body who, you know, oversees basically everything, the development of women's football from a young age to professional level, if you will, then that would probably address a lot of problems, or at least there would be some place that's actually working on that. I think right now, I mean, there are three different national leagues for women playing football as adults in the United States, and to say that they compete with each other is true, but it's, you know, that they work together, that happens sometimes, but they're all very distinctly separate from each other. But if there was a single governing body where that actually controlled all the leagues and defined, you know, sort of what their role was in terms of the development of the sport, that would be a good thing. I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before,
by folks who have been in the women's football game. Randall Fields, who used to be the owner of the Women's Spring Football League, I think put forth that idea in the recent past, and I think it's an idea that will get more popularity as the years go by.
Okay. Eric, do you have any questions for Coach?
Yeah, I know the NFL has the advantage of being able to market, I guess you could say, you know, bankable stars to where maybe the casual fan may not be all that into the game itself, but they've kind of latched on to certain players. Are you able to give us a sense of who that might be on the women's side, either future stars or anyone that's in the game now that people might want to keep an eye out for?
Sure. You know, I really think that every team has a marketable star on their team. It kind of depends on what audience you're talking about. If you're talking, you know, marketing to women and marketing to men is different sometimes. So if you define the markets, then we can talk really about, you know, what you might be looking for. But in terms of the performances of the women on the field, sure. I mean, there are stars. I mean, Sammy Grisafi is the kind of a star, not just on the football field, but amongst all those circles in the music business. And how marketable is she to the outside world, if you will? Whitney Veely is an amazing athlete. She broke records at running back. She's, her play on the field speaks for itself. And if that's what people are interested in, then sure, there are marketable players out there. What are some of the parameters that you're talking about, Eric?
Well, basically just in general, I know a lot of the teams and leagues themselves are trying to build a bigger fan base. And I know, like, some of the major male sports, one of the tools that they use are, you know, some of the superstars that they have. So, of course, you know, for myself and Kishi and, like, you know, people like us out there who are kind of new to the game, you know, some people kind of, you know, they look for particular players first, and then they kind of, you know, latch on to a particular team after that. So I guess, you know, more so just in general as far as, you know, building fan base or building more of a buzz about it, you know, just kind of trying to find a sense of who to, you know, look out for.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I hear what you're saying now. And like I said, I will go back to say, like, every player's got at least one person who's, like, you know, like super cool. I mean, I think Rachel Gore, the former Seattle Majestics quarterback who just joined the Chicago Force, is definitely somebody that you want to keep an eye on. She's definitely worth watching. She's an amazing athlete. She's got a lot of skills. She can play a lot of different positions than quarterback. So that actually makes Chicago a very, very intriguing team this year, despite all of their changes. Another player on Chicago who I like a lot is Jeanette Gray, wide receiver. She kind of filled in at quarterback last year when Grisafi was injured. Again, she's another person who's really an amazing athlete and somebody that I think people could look to and say, wow, she's pretty cool. I'm pretty sure, like, you know, any team you mentioned, I could probably tell you a couple people to keep an eye on. And I understand that to fans who are new to the game, you know, it's kind of hard to sort of take in, because the league is really, you know, there's so many teams and so many players. It's amazing. I would suggest that people kind of
latch on to a team first before you pick out who your fans are, who you're fans of. You know, cheer on your local team. You got to get out there. And the really great thing about women's football is that you can actually meet these people in person without, you know, I'm never going to meet Tom Brady, but I like talking to Allison Cahill, and that's pretty cool.
Well, see, you know what, Coach, and I understand exactly what Eric is saying, too, because, and I agree with what you're saying about latching onto a team, but it's a little bit easier to latch onto a team when you know who to look for. For, like, example, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area, but everyone who listens to the show knows that I am a diehard Cowboys fan. And one of the reasons why I'm a diehard Cowboys fan is because I was a tall female. So I was given the nickname Too Tall Jones. And I'm like, well, who's the Too Tall? So I'm like, well, who's the Too Tall Jones? So, of course, now I'm researching and looking up and, my, you know, and finding out. And I'm like, oh, well, this is cool. So, you know, so I started, you know, I started gravitating more, you know, to the Dallas Cowboys, you know. And, of course, now I'm a diehard lifelong fan, and I know who the players are, and I know the stats and bios and all that other fun stuff. But it's because of an association that I was given awareness. And I totally understand what Eric is saying, in that sometimes in terms of marketing, if we knew who to look for, then we might start paying more attention because it breeds association, it breeds association with the team, with an organization, with a philosophy. So now I'm going to ask you, as a coach, a challenging question. And it's one that kind of goes a little hand-in-hand with Eric's question about marketability. And I'm going to try to phrase this carefully so as to not be insulting to any of the players. One of the reasons why my handle on Twitter is Kishi's Cuties is because years ago I used to write a column that focused on the hot men of the NFL. Because as women, we watch a little differently. You know, of course, there's a lot of females because we love sports. But I'm still a female. And as a heterosexual female, I'm very attracted to men. So I'm not just looking at the play on the field. I'm certainly enjoying the view off the field. Do you think that at some point women's football will be able to find that balance of marketing femininity and attractiveness, as well as balancing it with the tenacity and the awesomeness of the play on the field? For example, there are some players, I don't care how they play, I just like to look at you. There are other players, I don't care how you look, I just want you to run the ball. I just want you to score. I just want you to hit someone. I don't care what you look like when you take your helmet off. I want you to play. And some people kind of manage to do both, like a Tom Brady. Do you think that women's football will ever be able to get to that point where they can have like a Tom Brady, a Tony Romo, a Aaron Rodgers? I'm trying to think of who's hot right now. I'm kind of gravitating toward quarterbacks right now. Before he went, you know, downhill in a lot of people's eyes, T.O. was very big in a lot of my female circles. So the point is do you think female football will be able to find and strike that balance between being able to marketing themselves in their, and owning their attractiveness and sexuality as women, as well as being respected for their play on the field? And I hope I phrased that correctly.
I think you phrased that correctly. I completely understand your question. And I hope nobody's offended by it, because it's a question I think that is on a lot of people's minds. I think the fact of the matter is, yeah, the people are there. The players are there. The leagues themselves don't really market the players in that fashion. And really, I think a lot of the marketing that's done in women's football is kind of performed by the teams themselves. So, in essence, it comes down to a team and the way that they want to market their team, and how they want their players to participate in that marketing. But you're talking about a national identity, a national marketing brand, if you will. It's kind of like the point is new. The leagues don't really approach it that way. Now, should they? That's a completely other question. I think they have everything that they need in terms of, you know, the players. I think the qualities that you're talking about in individual people, in players, in terms of their athleticism and their sexiness, if you will, their friendliness, their that quality of being somebody that people like, even if they don't know them, to see that they are an awesome football player and they seem like a real cool person, and you know they might be attractive to you or other people. I mean, we're also talking a wide spectrum of different, arenas of what attracts people to one another. And I don't want to go too far afield with your question, but you know, I think that the players are there in terms of people being really cool, being people that could be the faces of the league. They're there. You know, they're there. It's just a matter of whether the leagues want to market themselves that way. I mean, you can take it all the way to the other extreme of, you know, you've got the LFL and other kind of bikini leagues across the globe, and a lot of the times it's really more the image that's important than the play. So you kind of pick your poison right now. I'm not sure what's going to happen in the future, and I think you guys are trying to figure out, you know, you're trying to say, like, what might women's football look like in the future if it was a little bit more savvy with marketing? And could it be like an NFL? Possibly. You know, I think it's really, we just don't know what's going to happen.
Right. No, absolutely. Well, Coach, I appreciate your coming on, and but before we ask you to let everybody know where they can follow you for additional updates and great information about what's happening in the world of women's football, Eric, did you have any additional questions for Coach?
No, I think that was it.
Okay, wonderful. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was the wonderful, awesome backseat coach who is literally giving up some great information on a regular daily basis when you follow him on social media, and what you have provided for our audience, for our listeners, and I'm hoping, I'm speaking for Erica myself, in terms of just backstory and information about women's football has been nothing short of amazing today. So we really and truly appreciate your coming on. Can you please tell everyone where they can follow you to keep up with women's gridiron updates?
Absolutely. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Backseat Coach. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/backseatcoach. And I've got a lot more information about women's football, so ask me to come on anytime, and I would be happy to oblige.
Well, I really and truly, again, I appreciate you so much, and I know that I would love for you to come back. I know Erica is just bummed that she missed you, so I'm sure that we'll have to bring you back just so Erica can have a chance to chat with you today. But
I should take this opportunity then to actually congratulate Erica on her team winning the Super Bowl. It was a very exciting game to watch. Certainly, being a New Englander myself, it was quite bananas.
yes, it was. So, again, we know where my team is, but yes, we are happy for Erica because she was giving me the side eye because I had picked Seattle for that game. So she gave me the side eye for a week. But yes, we are absolutely happy for our co-host. So again, Backseat Coach, thank you so much for coming on today and being our wonderful guest, and we look forward to chatting with you more as the season gets underway.
Thank you, Kishi, and thank you, Eric. It was nice talking with you.
Thanks again, Coach.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, everyone, that was the wonderful backseat coach. And, you know, thanks again, everyone, for networking with the No Joke Football Project. And we appreciate it, Coach. We're going to take care of a little bit of business before Eric and I chat updates with NFL. Subscribe to our playlist at Gridiron Beauties at YouTube channel and witness all the girls playing American football like a girl, No Joke Football. Follow the new Twitter handle for the LIBF. And the new Twitter handle is @1LIBF and our network partner @Radio_Iman on Twitter for updates and scores weekly. Again, those Twitter handles are @1LIBF and our network partner @Radio_Iman on Twitter. The PGFL 2015 Week 2 saw the Evil Queens get second in their win 28-0 versus Medusas, plus their impressive win 67-38 win versus the Pretty Monsters. Now, I just want to say 28-0 is a beat down. And any team named Medusa, I know I'd be a little worried. So for them to get beat down like that, that is an extremely impressive win. We will also have updates on Facebook and follow us on @PGFLOfficial on Twitter and on Facebook.com/LIGAPGFL for scores. Finally, from the Caribbean Football League, where Eric and I really want to be right now. Okay, let me speak for myself. Where I really want to be right now. Eric, you really want to be there too?
I wouldn't mind it. The weather here right now is really nice, but I wouldn't mind that, though.
Yeah, well, we only got up to 35 today here in D.C., so I really would not mind being down there supporting my Caribbean sisters of their football and being in the stands with something cold in my hand. And that I can cheer for. I can put on a skirt and some shorts or something and kick. Please follow the ladies, though, at Buccaneers Bikinis for updates. Again, follow them on Twitter at Buccaneers Bikini for updates. Also, everyone, get your LNFA Spanish League updates and stats at www.fifa.esinfa. Again, that's www.fifa.es/infa. And use the hashtag LNFAFeminina on Twitter. And you can follow the @FIFA_Spain for updates of matches on Twitter and also follow @NFLHispania. Follow everything across the ocean in Spain. Follow again @FIFA_Spain and @NFLHispania. And this week also saw round 4, the Sapphire Series by the BAFA women in the UK. So our sisters across the ocean in the UK, please follow them again @BAFA on Twitter for updates. And a reminder again, Australian women's off-season updates. So while some of the other teams are just getting started, the Australian League is already come to a finale. So now keep up with what's happening in the off season. Keep up with the updates on the latest at LGLA Aust. Again, that's Twitter at LGLAUST, Gridiron Victoria, Queensland, ACT, and New South Wales. And you can get that information by following at Women's Gridiron or at LGLAUST on Twitter and their website, www.wglaus.com, for cool features and past stories. And before I forget, we have another update. So let me go grab that really quickly. from Oscar. And the update is, oh, I'm sorry, my sinuses are starting to kick in.
Uh-oh.
Week one update. I know, I'm trying so hard. Oh, it is. It's the week one update. Cindalou win gives Legacy a losing record for the first time in 4 years with a 0-1 victory. So at Legacy loss is definitely a rarity. So thank you so much, Oscar, for that update. Again, Cindalou win gives Legacy a losing record for the first time in 40 years. And for those who don't know, that is for the ladies who are playing football in Guam with the WTFL. And you can follow them on Twitter at GWTFL671. That's Guam Women's Tackle. So as you can clearly see, ladies tackle football is truly taking off internationally. And finally, there are 2 weeks left until the Legends Football League, the Women's Football Alliance, and the Independent Football League, I'm sorry, the Independent Women's Football League kick off in the USA. So we had the backseat coach on today giving us the backstory, the history, information, as well as updates about what's happening. We also know that, you know, the tryouts, they're still here. So if you have not made your way to a team, follow us on Twitter so you can get more information about where and how to try out. Because very soon we are going to kick off American ladies football here in the United States of America and in Canada. 41 days until Western Women's Canadian Football League kicks off in Canada. So ladies in North America, run, don't walk to your nearest tryout so you can get with a team. And following again our network on Twitter, we have at Backseat Coach, who we just had on today, at WFB Talk, at Miss Gridiron, the number 9, at GI Queendom, at Radio_Iman, and continue to share our posts and info on women's tackle football, full kit and non-full kit. And ladies and gentlemen, that's women's football news. Follow us on our social sites on Twitter at Gridiron Beauties or Facebook.com/Gridiron Beauties, Instagram Gridiron Beauties. And we are wrapping up that section. So now, Eric, I know why you were sick last week, that you were sick that you could not join in, jump in to talk free agency. So I, my friend, I'm going to open up the floor and let you go. I need you to catch up and tell us all of your fabulous, wonderful, as well as former football player insights about what you observed in the world of free agency and the NFL. And you can even start with your Chicago Bears.
Well, actually, there's not a whole lot really going on with the Bears. I mean, they're not trying to be, you know, splashy this year like they have been the past few years. I mean, they've made some solid pickups. But, you know, so far they've been pretty conservative. I'm happy with, you know, the way things are going so far. And I know initially they said Jay Cutler was going to be the starter. But this past week, John Fox came out and said, okay, there's going to be an open competition at quarterback. So that'd be Cutler and Jimmy Clausen. Now, I don't think Jimmy Clausen is quite the quarterback, or at least I should say the athlete that Jay Cutler is. But I mean, if this is legitimately, you know, they're both starting out even, and if Clausen comes out on top by week one, what do you do with Jay Cutler? I mean, obviously you're not going to pay him. I think he's guaranteed, what, you know, something like $14, $15 million this year. So I'm sure they're not going to just, you know, have him on the bench making that kind of money. So, I mean, that brings questions there. But more so, I guess the biggest topic right now is what's going on with Adrian Peterson. Is he still going to be a Viking?
No. No. You are not going to get away that easy. You and I both know the biggest topic in Chicago football is your off-season acquisition that is very controversial, but was told that it was a good defensive pick. If the Cowboys pick up Greg Hardy, who did you guys pick up?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yep. I'm sorry. Nice try. Not going to let you get away with it. Come on. You got a dish. Look, you know I have to face the Greg Hardy comments. So, sorry, bud. This is love, but this is also football. So I'm going to need you to dish. What are your thoughts on your latest controversial acquisition that is going to improve your defense that you yourself have said is struggling?
Right. Well, I mean, I look at it this way. I know there's a lot of people in Chicago up in arms about, you know, bringing this guy in. I've been listening to, because when I'm at work, I have ESPN Chicago streaming on my computer, so I'm like, I stay up to date on all that stuff. So,
wow.
There's a lot of people that are kind of up in arms about that. But I guess this, my point of view is slightly different. The way I look at it is, first of all, it's the Bears that are the ones that are, you know, kind of risking their, you know, money, so to speak. They're the ones that were willing to take the risk. You know, they said they've done their background checks. They've done interviews with people. They've talked to people that know him, that they've talked to people that have played with him. And pretty much to a person, it's, you know, they don't really view him as that type of guy. So the way I see it is, if the Bears were willing to risk, you know, put that financial risk out there for themselves to give this guy a shot, then hey, I'm cool with it because you know, it doesn't affect me if he you know, does something off the field and gets himself in trouble. You know, it doesn't affect my wallet or anything like that.
What kind of money though did they give Ray McDonald? It was it more incentive laden with his contract, or?
Yeah, I think it was more incentive laden. I don't have the numbers right here in front of me, but I know it wasn't cheap. But as we all know, contracts in the NFL are not guaranteed anyway. So,
right.
You know, even if something does happen, they can, you know, just, you know, cut him and, you know, move on to the next one. But yeah, I think they'll give him, you know, ample chance to, you know, to return to form. But I guess my take on it is, you know, yeah, these are allegations. Nothing's been proven. Although
right.
Some of the things that have come out about the whole situation kind of make you wonder, you know,
right.
As far as, you know, a 911 call and stuff like that. So, you know,
something to definitely make you think.
Right. And, I mean, the scope of the entire, I guess, you know, pro sports scene in general is kind of a microcosm of society. I mean, we, you know, we live next door to people. We work with people, you know, that have had issues, you know, brushes with the police, all kinds of things. So to say, well, you know, well, this is what happened. You know, there's a 911 call. There's allegations. You know, he can't play anymore. You know, I think that's wrong because, you know, this is the land of second chances. If he did do something, yeah, he should pay the price, but also after that, he should be given, you know, another shot. So if something did happen, I'm sure that will come to light. He needs to, you know, pay the price for that. If nothing did happen, then he should be able to move on with his life and, you know, do something productive with it.
I totally agree. All right, you're off the hook now. You can continue. I just want to let you know I wasn't gonna let you slide. Only because I have to face the I've got to face the Earth too. So.
Yeah. That I think that you are in the tougher situation because there was some actual proof there.
Right. And a whole lot of other evidence and
And the only reason why nothing went down is because she ended up not showing up to court. So, I mean,
right.
There isn't really much they could do, you know, if she's not there in court. But, yeah, you're right. It is going to be a little bit tougher on the Cowboys finding Greg Hardy. And, you know, the Cowboys did set themselves up financially, you know, in a great position because 90% of the contract is incentive-laden, and it's about what he produces as well as keeping his nose clean. Plus, I'm sure that he also knows that, you know, after a while, you're not going to get but so many more stops. And if you burn those bridges, then at some point, talent isn't worth the financial headache. And I think
right.
that for Greg Hardy and Ray McDonald, and that's really where they are right now is, you know, you got one foot on the banana peel and one foot out the door. So you got to figure out what's more important and how to walk that walk. What other free agency news has caught your attention in the past, couple of weeks since we were last on the air together?
Well, I guess the up and down situation with Adrian Peterson. First, you're hearing, you know, his agent met with the Vikings, everything went great. Then you hear he met with the Vikings again, and they're at odds. And then you hear again, oh, everything went great. And so everything is going back and forth. You're also starting to hear now, you know, of course, Adrian saying, hey, I don't think the organization really had my back during that whole, you know, child abuse situation. Which, to me, I think he really needs to, I guess, for lack of a better word, mature in this situation, because if anything like that comes out about you, of course there's going to be people in that big of an organization saying negative things about you because, you know, they, obviously they're not around, so they can only speculate. So,
right.
And, you know, also they started to lose sponsors, protests, so... I mean, I would imagine, like, if I'm in that situation, I would imagine, you know, people would start to lose faith in me and, you know, maybe say some things behind my back. And, you know, I would expect that. So, I don't know, maybe he, over time, has gotten this kind of, like, entitlement mentality that, you know, no matter what I do, you should still, you know, have my back 100%. But I think he should,
right.
you know, really take another look at the situation and, you know, maybe take a another chance and or you know maybe take another look at you know staying in Minnesota. But I mean that's
the
biggest thing.
But
I've
I can understand. But I can understand how he feels a little bit too. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that I don't understand the position that the Vikings took because. The whole situation is, it's atrocious, the accusations, the whole nine, especially, you know, of course, I'm a mom, so I'm a little biased. However, I think that 90% of the Vikings organization was to literally distance himself as if he smelled bad, very fast, just because they were trying to ensure that the public reaction to the Ravens did not rub off on their organization. And I can see how he feels. He was kind of hung out to dry. I can understand that, where you're talking about someone who went through the horrific ACL injury, who worked himself like a horse to get back in shape to produce on the field. And I can understand where he feels like he has given so much. And in his time, you know, a couple of the team ran as far as they could. That said, from a business point of view, he also didn't leave them much choice.
Yeah, that's my point.
You know, because they have to protect 54 other guys or 51 other guys on that roster, as well as the employees and their families that depend on a paycheck from that organization. So I understand he feels the way he feels, but I also think that you know, like you said, he's looking at, you know, hey, where are you when I need you, when I've given so much, you know, and people come to this park to see me, which puts money in the mouth of, and people are buying my jerseys, which is putting money in the hands of and food in the mouth of. So it's a double-edged sword, and I can totally understand that. I think by him not staying in Minnesota, it's going to add to it's going to throw Dallas back in the conversation again, you know. And I just, and especially because we don't have DeMarco Murray. So I really think that that's just going to put us back in the conversation when, truthfully, I am ready for Dallas to just be still, and I'd like us to just keep moving quietly, unnoticed, through free agency world and just do what we need to do, because we don't need any more media scrutiny after the whole DeMarco Murray thing. So, you know, that's,
well, Dallas,
you know,
just
Dallas
my is always going to have media scrutiny. So
I know.
There's no way you're getting around that.
I know. So we lose DeMarco Murray. We pick up Greg Hardy. I'm like, wow, talk about we're just going to be in the news. Okay, so speaking of the NFC East, you know, this is actually a perfect segue of staying in the news and issues and, oh, the rumor mills are following. Did you hear that the Redskins' new GM, Scott McLuhan, has said that Mariota is an option with that fifth pick if he's still available? Woo!
Yes, I just saw that today, as a matter of fact. So that brings about another quarterback controversy, potentially, because you're saying, well, at least Gruden is saying RG3 is our guy. But if you're drafting somebody like Mariota, who is going to be somewhere at the top of the first round, you don't draft him to,
yep,
you know, put him on the bench. So, I mean, that's
exactly
a whole other can of worms there that they're going to have to deal with if that should happen.
Because if they draft him, that leaves them with four quarterbacks, two potential starting quarterbacks. Now, we all know Colt McCoy is content to be the backup. He knows where he knows his value. He knows his worth. He's like, okay, I'm just sitting backup land, step up and step in as needed, like he did in that horrific win against my Dallas Cowboys. But what then does this say about the whole Kirk Cousins thing? Because if they draft Mariota, the battle is going to be between RG3 and Mariota, and Kirk Cousins can just politely ask, please trade me while I still have some stock value and worth.
Well,
and
they,
at that point in time, if Kirk Cousins became available, would you want him in Chicago? Seeing as how I know as a fan you're unhappy with Jay Cutler.
I'm not all that excited about Kirk Cousins. I mean, I've seen, you know, a number of starts, and I wasn't all, you know, that impressed. I mean, he didn't do a bad job, but it wasn't. He's not the guy that's going to take you to the next level, which is exactly what Chicago is looking for. So, no, I think I would rather have Clawson in there versus Cousins, to be honest with you.
Okay. Well, all I know is that tomorrow it is going to be ugly when the Monday morning talk radio shows hit the air in D.C. because I promise you, this is going to be nothing but a media circus up until the draft, now that that announcement
yeah.
has been made.
Yeah.
And that is truly going to be a media circus. So, and speaking of circus, haha, perfect segue, Clowney. Jadeveon Clowney says that he is encouraged by his recovery from his knee surgery. Do you think that Clowney can be that freak of nature that he was purported to be that never got off the ground? And do you think that he'll still be that person that was anticipated when the Texans drafted him last year? Or do you think that he'll be good but not the potential he could have had? What are your thoughts on Clowney in terms of what you think he'll do next?
Well, see, that's a tough one, because athletically, he's such a freak, you know, to be that big and still be, you know, that fast and athletic. But the question is his durability. Is he going to be one of those guys that is, you know, injured every other game, or, you know, is his body going to hang in there and be able to absorb the punishment? I think that remains to be seen. But as long as he can stay healthy, you know, I think he can definitely be a force. Because, I mean, you look at J.J. Watt on the other side, you know, obviously you can't focus too much attention on either one of them as long as, you know, Clowney is healthy. So, yeah, if he's healthy, I mean, it's going to be crazy down there. But, yeah, I just said, since he hasn't played that much, it's hard to say, yeah, he's going to be this or he's going to be that. It's just one of those things where
right.
You just have to see if he can stay healthy. That's the biggest issue.
But can you imagine Clowney and Watt both at full speed and both healthy? That's just such a scary thought.
I truly
would not want to be on the offensive receiving end of those two.
Well, actually, that reminds me of the 85 Bears. You know, they had, you know, Wilbur Marshall, Otis Wilson, Mike Singletary, Dan Hampton, Steve McMichael. I mean, you know, teams just didn't want to come in there. So I think that would be the
closest. Because of that speed.
What's that?
Well, and that's just it. Because it's the speed. I mean, it's not just that they hit you and you never see it. It's just that they hit you and you never see it coming. They have
well,
the ability between the two of them to get off the line so fast, and the quarterback has barely had a chance to take two steps back when all of a sudden he's on his back.
Right. And that's what it reminds me of, is, you know, just that avalanche of just pressure. As soon as that ball is snapped, they've got two steps on your offensive tackle. So, your tackles are playing catch up almost the whole game. So as long as he can stay healthy, I mean, you know, I can't wait to see it.
Well, yeah. Now that I can say, you know, from a defensive end, that's just going to be a thing of beauty. And it is truly my sincerest hope that, you know, he really and truly will be able to get healthy and remain healthy, because that just, you know, like I said, you know, sometimes you want to see people run. Other times you just want to see people hit. and I'm not going to lie. I would love, as long as it's not my quarterback, I'd love to see Davey and Clowney be able to get to a quarterback. But now, you know, with all of the rule changes that have been going on, especially, like, have you heard about the ones and they're trying to make all these crazy changes to the field goal and the extra point, and to the point where that thing was so convoluted and spinning. But I say that to say we've become such a pass-happy league. You think that players like Jadeveon Clowney and J.J. Watt, and we know how Erica feels, but with the more they keep changing the rules, do you think they're going to get a fair shake at being able to play the game to the best of their physical abilities, or will they be limited by all of these rules for a pass-happy league?
Meaning the defensive players?
Yes, the defensive players.
Well, it's hard to say because, you look at the way the rules are now, I don't think they're really getting a fair shake because, I mean, you can barely breathe on a guy and you get a flag. I know when I was playing, you could touch a guy, you could grab him. Even in college, you could hit a receiver before the ball was in the air, as long as the ball hadn't been thrown. But now, you can, after 5 yards, you're not supposed to even touch him. And you got receivers coming off the ball, 6'2", 6'3". 220, 230,
right.
Can run like a deer, and
mm-hmm.
The only, you really don't have an advantage at all. You kind of have to just, because
wait for him to catch
ball
the ball
snapped,
and then
I mean,
hit
you
them.
Can, well, I mean, to even back it up before then, you know, when you're lining up, you can kind of, you know, try to anticipate what's going to happen based on the situation, based on film study, based on who you're covering or what have you. But you really, bottom line, you really have no idea what's going to happen before that ball is snapped. So the split second that the ball is snapped, you're kind of in reaction mode until you know, okay, for sure, this is what's going to happen. So in the meantime, a lot of times it's just natural just to try to, you know, grab a guy just to try to slow him down a little bit or to try to give yourself some kind of advantage. But, I mean, if you can't even do that, I mean, that's, it seems like every rule that's made is, you know, goes with to the offense's favor. So there's a lot of times where they're not getting a fair shake, but, I mean, that's the rule that was made, you know. So, I mean, unless they start making some other changes to kind of, you know, bring things back a little bit to where, you know, defense has a little bit more of an advantage, which, you know, I don't think will happen because then, you know, less points will be scored and, you know, you start losing fans. So, I mean, it's just it's
right.
a tough situation for defenses right now.
Yeah, but I don't mind. I don't want blowout games. To be truthful with you, I don't want to see blowouts. Like, I don't like games that are like, I don't know, 17 to 28 to, you know, I'm like, no. I prefer games, truthfully, that are within 4 points of each other. And I'll tell you why, because that means then that either they were really just both weak or they were both scrapping.
Mm-hmm.
And if we continue to give offenses too much assistance, it will become boring because I'm like, oh, there they score again. Nope, they scored again. At one point, then why are you out there? Why even have a defense? Why don't you just let the offenses just keep running down the field and scoring? Because after a while, that will get boring to me. I want to see a stop. I want to see a hit. I want to hear it go boom. I want that. And I want to see interceptions. I want to see fumble recoveries. And I'm maybe at heart, I'm a defensive girl. You know, but I love to see as soon as a wide receiver gets the ball, boom, he's on his butt. You might be in there, oh, wow, let me rub my little back seat a little bit because I just got put on it. I want that because if you just keep going down the field all the time, it does get boring. And I need to see some competition. And I think that's what is going to be lost, is the whole value of football is competition. And if you continue to skew one side to another, you lose that competitive edge. So I'm okay with, really and truly okay with them not changing it so much for us to be a pass-happy league. And that is actually the perfect segue into the last thing I wanted to talk about this evening before we get ready to wrap up. Speaking of passing, did you hear? Or did you know that Seattle Seahawks quarterback Russell Wilson spent Saturday at spring training with the Texas Rangers?
Yeah, I've seen some pictures of that floating around online. This is his second year there. I really don't know what it is he's trying to accomplish other than, you know, just he's just bored, I guess. I don't know. Because he says he's not trying to make the team, obviously. So, I mean, you know, I really don't know what his point is in doing it, but, hey, I mean, I guess it's...
Well, you remember Colin... Well, yeah, but you remember Colin Kaepernick was also a minor league player, too. And I actually think that might be good for both. And that was actually one of the things they said was going to be an advantage for Kaepernick, was his ability to throw the ball would help with his accuracy. So I actually think it's smart, you know, for him to just practice, especially from a pitching point of view, you know.
Yeah.
And
I can,
in terms of his accuracy.
I can understand that, but, I mean, there's other things to do to, you know, help to improve your accuracy.
True.
I'm just saying from, you know, from a baseball standpoint, to be at that level, anyone that I've seen do that, you know, like, you know, Deion Sanders, you know, Bo Jackson, Michael Jordan, you know,
mm-hmm.
their whole intention was to play in the MLB, not just to be out there, you know, just running around, which, like, you know,
right.
I haven't heard of Russell saying, hey, I'm trying to be a part of the Texas Rangers or I'm trying to make it to the MLB. The only thing I hear is, you know, hey, I want to be out there playing, but I have no intention of being on the team. So,
right.
But, I mean,
well,
you know, if he wants to be out there,
I mean, that's
you know, cool.
True. Well, and you know, he was a former minor league infielder for Colorado. So, I mean, there's,
right.
You know, there could be some substance to that in terms of what he's going to bring to the game. And is he also going to be playing with, you know, a minor league team, or is he actually trying to play on the Texas Rangers MLB lineup? So that will also tell as well, because whereas Bo played actually on the major league, you know, team, and Jordan never got out of the minors, and he can, you know, played on the farm league. So, and then lastly, so we'll see what he does. But also, before we wrap up, I just want to say prayers and best wishes to Coach Gibbs. His son DJ was announced earlier this week for symptoms of some kind of trauma to brain function. They don't really know what it is. They haven't diagnosed it medically. But Joe Gibbs' son, JD, did announce, you know, in terms of his, as you know, Coach Gibbs has his race team. So they announced that through Joe Gibbs Racing that JD is undergoing treatment for something that's impacting areas of his brain function. So best wishes to Coach Gibbs and his family, and, you know, but, you know, I hope that they get well soon, because, you know, of course, Coach has been a vital and significant part of NFL history, especially here in the D.C. area. And not being a Dallas fan, being a Dallas fan does not negate the respect that I have for Coach Gibbs and what he has brought to the sport, as well as what he means to this area. So we're getting ready to wrap up for the evening. Again, I think that's about everything. It was an awesome edition of The Blitz. Erica, once again, my darling, you are absolutely missed, and we hope that you feel better soon. Thank you again to @BackseatCoach for being our guest today and providing us with wonderful, awesome insight regarding the history and of you know, the Renegades, formerly the Militia, as well as, you know, just giving some really good insight into women's professional football. Reminder to check out @GridironGirl on Twitter and GridironGirl.org for college football, bowl insight and stories. Even though it's not the same sport, it does appear that the Final Four, for those of you who are diehard NBA fans, that the Final Four has been set in basketball for March Madness, so it looks like it's going to truly be a little bit mad over the next couple of days, and it appears that Duke is one of the Final Four teams. I think Kentucky is one of the Final Four teams, but we'll have all of that information next week once we confirm. And I'm sure we'll talk a little bit of that. I'm sure, Eric, you probably have your picks and chooses. Did you even do a bracket this year?
You know what? I've never gotten into the brackets. I haven't been all that into college basketball in a long time. So, you know, I haven't done any brackets. But I've been kind of paying attention, though.
Oh, I never do one. Oh, I never do a bracket. It's more fun to watch everyone else and laugh. So, no, I never do a bracket. But I do pay attention once we start getting to the Final Four. So I'm looking forward to the next couple of weeks. Everyone, please follow me in Kishi at Kishi's Cuties. That's KESHISCUTIES. You can follow Eric at Fit for Life. That's life with a Y. And follow Erica at Pat C. Fangirl 12 for more NFL free agency, off-season moves, as now we're getting into April. So well, now it's okay, Erica, for people to start doing mock drafts so we can start getting ready for more of the mock drafts once it becomes officially April the 1st. Do not forget that we have our new contest. Go to the shop. Tell us which one is your favorite T-shirt or hoodie. Post your gear link on Twitter or Facebook for a chance to win, but you have to post by April the 24th. Again, you guys can catch us on Twitter and also catch Erica at cover3 spelled out during the NFL season and her Are You Kidding Me rant on YouTube. Thanks, everyone, for your continued support. Thanks for listening. We love you guys. Our audience is continuing to grow. It's amazing. If you have not done your tryouts yet or you want to try out, hurry up. Follow us on Twitter for information about teams in your area. And good luck for ladies in the United States and in Canada as we get ready for women's professional football kicking off. Eric, anything else you want to say before we close out for the evening?
Go Bears.
Okay, now see, now I have to do mine. Okay, go Cowboys. All right, well, thank you again, everyone, for joining us for another awesome edition of the Gridiron Blitz, and we will be back next week. Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.